weekly English medium discussion. Still, whenever Buddha Rakkita is not here, missing, if he's here, we are supposed to do the Suttattaka, Suddattaka Sutta in Parayana Vagga. Till he comes, we can start the discussion. If anyone is having a particular topic or particular suggestion or any interview reports to start with the discussion, I cordially welcome. Please present your report or suggestion or topic.
Sarai Bhante, we have received one report today. With your permission, I'd like to present that.
Yes, please, start. Ari.
Yes. Dear Bhante, I am 14 years old and I have been practicing for 2.5 years. This is my experience. Please advise me. When I do my sitting meditation, close my eyes, there is an awareness. However, there is also awareness of other things, like my senses, but most of my awareness is on that awareness. Not sure what that awareness is on. It is just awareness of being aware. When I carry on with my meditation and keep watching the awareness, it grows and my now fully on just being aware. That is how I reach the state of just being. I stay in that state until suddenly I am brought out. I don't know what brings me out of this just being state. It is not distraction like a sound or a feeling that brings me out. I am just brought out and I am no longer in that state. Teruvan Saranai, Hasini. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
Good. To start the participation of a 14 years, and the report is more philosophical, awareness of being aware, and that may be the simple reason Venerable Jnanaponika is presenting the bare attention. It is the stepping stone to the mindfulness. Not up to the full-fledged, full-blown mindfulness, just bare attention. And Ken Wilber, he put it as choiceless awareness. And some other person tried to mention evenly suspended attention. No distraction, no primary object, just be aware. And you yourself mentioned just being. That is the human. Whenever you are not at that point, you are eccentric, you are mad. You are just being. And to just being, we are full-fledged. We are everything available. To be someone only, we need something, knowledge, equipments and places and everything. So therefore, just being is an endowment only for human being. Beasts and the yakha, deva, they can't do it. So a human being lives and die maybe 100 years, not a single thought moment, they are not enlightening into the just being. They consider it as a wastage of time. They consider it as a utter lost. So what they do is do this plan, that plan and everything, ultimately become a slave. You don't know who you are. So just being is come to the zero level, datum line, and you can do either positive or negative, but hardest thing is come up to the zero level, that is we call de-learning process. We learning a deconstruction process. We can go back to the zero and then either go to the positive or negative. And that is why there is no God. You are the creator God. You can create either positive or negative. That decides your will. And will itself is distorting you from the bare attention and bare awareness. So therefore you can understand you have your will. Each and every will you use for your destruction. You use to go against the grain and turbulence. Just being. Just like a flower is blooming, wind is blowing, rain is raining. So that is mere aesthetic, mere natural phenomena. And the Buddha is using this as universal laws. We never go with the universal law. We try to adjust it. Ultimately, we get adjusted. That is what the climatic disaster for Sunday. And the early aboriginals and indigenous people, they just live with the atmosphere. They had no remarks. no landmarks. If someone is died, they pass the, leave the place and go to another place and leave. No remarks. Earth is not being shit. It is pure. Civilized people, wherever they go, they put landmarks. They pull this and that, I did this and I did that, and this is our era. And he came out with a nice idea, paleo, what is that term you thought?
The Anthropocene. Anthropocene.
Anthro means human.
Yes. So it's the human time.
Anthropocene?
So, yeah.
Spelling?
Anthropocene. A-N-T...
P-H-A.
T-H-R-O-P-H-R-O-C-E-N-E, I think. Anthropocene or...
We can check it. That means human being came and started the nuclear bomb and put it, and everything is recorded in the rocks now. They are the most destructive animal on the earth, and we call the most intelligent animal. So let that intelligence go to hell. Just being. And 14 years, they can understand. The first time when I go to the university, Peradeniya, there was an appendix in the paper, have an appointment. The name was disappointment. So it's negative. The whole argument is, it's an A4 paper, have an appointment with a disappointment, you will never get disappointed. And it appears like negative. And so where are the education? Where are the skill? Where are the civilization? Where are the organization? All nonsense. You can learn everything, but don't lose being aware that I am here, I am now. And it's the endowment, so we are born with. There's a Irish girl writing, born to be free. We got this life to be free, not to get married and hooked up with and connected with this and that. What a loss. We are born free. There's a film called Born Free, and that girl is writing, born to be free. So what's happening? Born to be recognized myself as this and that, ultimately you get crucified. So crucification, I think, is the most worst thing happen, because the world will understand you in a wrong way. So I really appreciate the 14 years old idea, just being, and see, once you recognize whatever you do, that there you are. Wherever you go, there you are. Venerable Jnananda says, what you see, that you are. If you see beautiful thing, you are a beautiful person. If you see bad thing, you are a bad person. So what you see, that you are. And that is what quantum physics also going to explain. If you look at the world, Buddha says, if you look at the world in the peaceful way, pleasant way, glad way, you are in heaven. If you look at the world in the Paduttha Manasa, you are in a hell. Not the Nidai world, but here itself. So by meeting the people, you can understand how many of them are be on the ball, be in the present moment. How many people are future planning, past regret, and finding fault with others, and finding your own mistakes. It's good to understand how you are lucky, how much you are lucky. You are not smeared by that kind of thing, because we have seen Buddha, we have heard the Dhamma, we are practicing being in the present moment. That is to be aware that I have awareness. So that is called verification your awareness, because you are aware about your awareness. That awareness is not yours. Moment you understand that awareness, that is not yours, but your endowment, I call birthright. In Satipasala, we recognize it as Jammadayadyak. It's a birthright of human, but due to all these agendas and all these motivations and the entertainments, we lost. We are living on other sides, so we become slaves. Never mind, it no, make no harm, but you have to understand, you must know how to live at home. How to live here and now, and that is, you need not any skill, but you need a catalytic effect. some kind of a catalyzer, and then you can spark. Good, Ari. Yes, you wanted to speak? That's
thank
mic.
You, Bhante, Tehran, sir.
You wanted to speak?
So
please, mind your own business. Don't disturb this. Okay. Yeah. 6 years.
Six views.
Ah, yes. So this I will give a little introduction. Yesterday also we discussed that in the Kaduvela, and I told while we are meditating, as a after effects or side byproduct of our meditation, some views are developing. This view indicate who you are. And Buddha summarized them in a Sabbasa Sutta. I kept in mind as 5 views. So when Dhammasumitta told, no, Bhante, 6 views. So Venerable Kovid and others were there, they took the script and read it. And I kept in my script 5. It's wrong. 6 views. And indicate while you are meditating, definitely you fall into either cleavage. And if you know, these are the pitfalls on the road. And if the friend can understand, let you know you are in such a pit, you are safe. So, your name, Venerable?
Dhamma Vijita.
Dhamma Vijita from America. He will give his review on the 5-6 views happening, according to my understanding, due to meditation.
Okay, Swami Nansa, thank you. So this is from the Sabbasava Sutta, All the Taints, 6 Views of Self, the second sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya. The views come under the heading Taints to be Abandoned by Seeing. This presentation is of the 6 views. Is for the most part a summary of Bhikkhu Bodhi's commentarial interpretation of them. Here, the uninstructed worldling is compelled to adopt one of 6 views when he or she, doubtful and perplexed, attends unwisely thus, was I in the past? Was I not in the past? What was I in the past? How was I in the past? Having been what did I become in the past? Shall I be in the future? What shall I be in the future? How shall I be in the future? Having been what shall I become in the future? Or else one is inwardly perplexed about the present thus. Am I? Am I not? What am I? How am I? Where has this being come from? Where will it go? When one attends unwisely in this way, one of 6 views arises. Self exists for me, arises in one as true and established, or the view no self exists for me, arises in one as true and established, or the view I perceive self with self arises in one as true and established, or the view I perceive not self with self arises in one as true and established, or the view I perceive self with not self arises in one as true and established. Or else one has some such view as this. It is this self of mine that speaks and feels and experiences here and there the results of good and bad actions. But this self of mine is permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change, and it will endure as long as in eternity. A summary of the meaning of these 6 views as interpreted by Bhikkhu Bodhi. Self exists for me. This is a general view of self in which one formulates and conceptualizes a sense of I that one then proceeds to grasp firmly. Next, no self exists for me. This is the annihilationism view that was present in India at the time of the Buddha. An equivalent term, nihilism, has 2 definitions coming from philosophy. One, the denial of the existence of any basis for knowledge or truth. And 2, the general rejection of customary beliefs in morality, religion, etc. And ethical nihilism gives the definition, the belief that there is no meaning or purpose in existence. Now, the following three views are closely related to each other and require some explanation in order to understand their meaning. They are, one, self-perceived self, two, I perceive not self with self, and three, I perceive self with not self. Bhikkhu Bodhi believes that these three views arose due to an Upanishad's doctrine that posited the nature of the self as consisting of a dual self made up of a silent observer and an active doer. The silent observer was thought to have been the aspect of the dual self which observed the active doer aspect of the dual self. The silent observer was thought to be featureless and without content. The active doer was thought to consist of all of one's thoughts, emotions, speech, actions, etc. In short, the meaning of these three views are as follows, according to Bhikkhu Bodhi. First, self-perceived self is the view taken by a person who would have identified with a silent observer perspective as well as an active doer perspective. One who would have identified more or less in equal proportions with both of these perspectives of self as one's identity view. The next view is, I perceive not self with self. Here and in the following view, the term not self signifies which aspect of the dual self one does not identify with. In this case, the term not self applies to that which is perceived, and according to the Upanishad's doctrine of the dual self, the active doer is perceived or observed by the silent observer. And so, because the active doer here is designated as not self, this means that it is not identified with. The term self in these three views refers to the aspect of the dual self which one would have been taking as one's identity view. Thus, in the view, I perceive not self with self, the term self applies to the aspect of the dual self, which is perceiving. Such a person thus took a view aligned with the characteristics of the silent observer. And a person who would have identified with the active doer aspect of the dual self doctrine, rather than the silent observer aspect, would have taken the view, I perceive self with not self. So, and then my own thoughts on these views are that I find it to be significant that what appears to be the primary motivation for taking a view is that in doing so, one seeks to rationalize one's craving for existence or craving for sensual pleasure. The view supports one's motivations and activities that are aimed at fulfilling one's cravings. In the previous three views, one seeks to align one's motivations and activities with the ideal silent observer state of being, or else one seeks to align with the ideal active doer state of being. In both cases, one is in bondage to one's craving. And then finally, in the last view of the six views, this is what Bhikkhu Bodhi refers to as the full-fledged, full-blown, eternalistic view of self. That is, it is this self of mine that speaks and feels and experiences here and there the results of good and bad actions. But this self of mine is permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change, and it will endure as long as eternity. I also made a visual visual chart. Explanation of the three selves that are based on the Upanishad's doctrine. So might help to
so that that is my main theme, because Upanishad talking about the Advaita Vedanta, Bhikkhu Bodhi tried to tackle it, but yes, not in a very, very efficient way. Mm. But we don't have material, but I never see the relationship between the Upanishad and the Sabbasava. Mm. So this will give, I will take little time.
Okay.
Thank you for taking time. It's a very, very intricate, complicated part. But Bhikkhu Bodhi's one, maybe some helping hand for us to go forward.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Buddha Rakhita also attended. So, if there are no other comments on this thing, we are going to go to the Paramattaka Sutta. And last time we started, and I would like to invite Venerable Buddha Rakhita to proceed with the particular sutta, please.
So, we are dealing with this octet on the Supreme, or the Paramattaka Sutta. And the background, again, just to remind people, is that this is the famous story of the king being frustrated with the ascetics. So he arranged that an elephant would be brought out, and then that the elephant would be inspected by six blind men, and that they would each approach or touch one part of the elephant, and then they would declare to the watching audience what they had learnt from, you know, what was in front of them. So one hung on to the trunk, one hung on to the legs, and one hung on to the tail or the ears. And they each reported a very different aspect of the elephant. And they all started to dispute with each other about the nature of the elephant. So one would say, well, it's like the trunk of a tree, and somebody else would say, no, you're a fool. It's more like a brush, the person who was hanging onto the tail. Or someone else would say it's more like a leathery flap, and this was the ear, or the trunk of the nose of the elephant was something else. It was like a python or something like that, or that the tusks were something hard. So this is the background story. So when the Buddha was informed about the king having made this demonstration, and the king had done this because he was quite frustrated with the different viewpoints of the different ascetics, and how the different ascetics or wanderers or religious teachers of the time were arguing and debating with each other. And he felt that this king felt that they really couldn't, they hadn't come to any conclusion. So what's very interesting in this Paramattaka Sutta is how the Buddha tackles this question itself, or how he understands or processes this story of the Buddha, that the Buddha had been told. Because it's very obvious in some ways that the answer should be, oh, you know, that if we know more about things, if we don't jump to the conclusion too early, or we have a more systemic approach to thinking. There's something called first principles thinking, which is where we try to go back to the basics. We try to accumulate the most fundamental information we can about the problem that's at hand, and we sort of rigorously apply logic and rationale to it. Then we can easily come to a definite conclusion. So in this way, if instead of the different blind men taking their own independent individual view, if they had maybe pooled and shared the different information, if they had communicated well with each other about that information, that they could have come to a better understanding of what the elephant, the nature of the elephant. Instead of taking their own individual slice of information and being blind to the other information and being blind to the other people's understanding, that they could have somehow pooled all of this information together and had a better understanding of the whole elephant. So this is very intuitive that we would think this, that systemic thinking was lacking in this situation, that if we had applied more first principles, we would have come to the right conclusion. But in fact, the Buddha doesn't answer the question, or he doesn't deal with this example from a systemic viewpoint. And one of the reasons I think that this is very important, and in relation to the problems that we face in the world today, is that the world problems that we face these days, such as climate change, or such as coronavirus at the moment, it's not simply that we can just pool all the different views together, but it actually requires a different level of thinking. So in this modern time, we're running into problems that may have existed in the past independently in different areas, but as the civilization has grown, as the number of people and the interactions between all of the different nations and peoples, these problems are not just solved by us sort of sharing information. This is a leg, this is a tusk, this is a trunk, this is the ears, this is the tail, this is the belly. So it's not just these problems are not going to be solved in the normal systemic manner, and they won't be solved either, you know, from first principles thinking. So here the Buddha actually steps up the understanding of the nature of the world and of the human mind to a higher level. And he relates it back to, what the other Venerable was just talking about, in a way, is back to views and this core understanding of conceit. So the first verse, again, just to remind you, so it's been a while since we were going through this. Settling on his own as supreme amongst views, whenever a person esteems as best in the world, in comparison, he says all other views are inferior, therefore he has not transcended disputes. So similarly, like the in this case with the elephant, the view of the person holding on to the legs will be different to the view of the person holding on to the tail or the tusk or the ears or the belly. And therefore will view their understanding, their perception, their information as inferior to his own. So you could say a reference to systemic thinking. Okay, you know, we can systematize, we can break up the problem, and we can come to some understanding. But if we have this sort of ego that I am superior and you are inferior, then there will be disputation. And again, the Buddha is really greatly pointing here towards the value of not getting into disputes, not arguing, not having anger, not being blinded by our views. So whatever benefit one sees for oneself in the seen, the heard, the sensed, or in good behavior and observances, having grasped hold of that alone, one regards all else as inferior. So here the Buddha breaks down, you know, what might be the basis for different assessments of inferior, superior, or we're all the same. And that he breaks it out into the seen, the heard, the sensed, in good behavior and observances. So we can also just extrapolate this out into how do we deal with climate change? How do we deal with coronavirus? How do we deal with war? How do we deal with droughts? How do we deal with all of these global problems? We all have our own seen, heard, and sensed. We all have ideas about what's good, the right behavior and observances. And we grasp onto our own nationalistic point of view, our ethnic point of view, our gender point of view, and so on. And we regard all others as inferior. And therefore, one has not transcended disputes. The skilled speak of that as a not, when one is attached and regards others as inferior. Therefore, a bhikkhu should not be attached to the seen, the heard, or sensed, or to good behavior and observances. So the Buddha points out that we have to kind of train ourselves not to get knotted up, not to get tied up with being attached, being attached to how, oh, I am superior. I hold on to my own behavior, to what I have seen, what I have heard, what I have sensed. I hold on to that as superior to with regards to others. So he talks about the skilled here. So this is a reference to a practicing bhikkhu, a practicing arahant. And so this is very lofty. And he's talking about cutting the knot of attachment that we have to our views, to our underlining sense of self and conceit. So this is really getting down to the real root of the problem. And so this is like what I might call zero level thinking about the world, not just first principles, not just systemic, but getting down and where systemic thinking might be just focused on the nature of the elephant whereas the zero level thinking is getting down to the level of the observer, the observer and what's shaping the thinking and the experience of the observer and their own attitudes and what they value and how they weight and how they approach the world itself. So it's switching the perspective from the object to the subject or to the sub, to the person looking at the object. I saw a clip recently and it was talking about this phenomena of software eats the world. And in Software Eats the World, they showed a desk, and this desk could have been a typical office desk from the 1990s, and it had a fax and a phone and a computer and a cathode ray. A calculator and all kinds of things on the desk. So many different things. And then it showed that they were being accumulated into a laptop. And then that laptop was being accumulated into a mobile phone, and then the mobile phone was being accumulated into like a pair of augmented reality glasses. So all of these different gadgets had been absorbed into like one gadget. And but I was looking at this, and what I was aware of as a meditator was like the mind is still the same. Because I was that person looking at that desk in the 1990s, the 2000s, the 2010s. So I've seen all of those transitions in these gadgets and software and that. But the mind that's looking at those things hasn't changed radically compared to the mind that was there in the 1990s. So even though the world has changed, even though the objects have changed, the viewer hasn't changed that much. So this is why even after 2,500 years, you know, the Buddha's experience or advice or wisdom is so relevant to the modern times. The objects can change from the time of the Buddha, plows and agrarian society and geolocated in North India. But here it is incredibly relevant to the modern times and incredibly pointing at the fundamental forces that drive the human dynamic, especially with regards to disputes, and the fundamentals that any king, that any ruler, any leader of any people or nation or NGO or organization, that they will fundamentally run into these exact same issues. So it's not software that is eating the world. It is the mind that is eating the world. And this kind of perspective that the Buddha brings to the nature of the observer, the nature of the view holder, and how the view holder is looking at the world is still the same old story. So and it's not going to be solved by systemic thinking. So when kings argue with other kings, they will be looking at each other as inferior, superior, or we are the same, when the reality is that we are all different. So this is, again, just a recap of the first three verses in this. Maybe Mahatera would like to comment on this section of the sutta.
Usually, before coming to the Paramattaka Sutta, I had the issue about this climatic changes and how forest monks, how mindfulness can give a conference, talk about kind of thing. And Venerable Buddha Rakita mentioned that Panthi Paramattaka Sutta is going to give the philosophical handling. And he primarily gave me that very Buddha Rakita now talk about the conceit, misled me with the ditthi and mana. Sorry, tanna and ditti. So he told people are cutting the forest because of the craving. They want to have timber. Never mind about the forest. And that is one craving. The other one is ditti. The forest department people say, don't enter into the forest. No changing. It must be with the deadlock principle. Dead logs must be fermented inside, decarbonate inside. Not go into that. So it's a ditti. So we Buddhist monks living in the forest, we have no craving for cutting the trees. And that is what ditti people accusing us. They think we are cutting the trees. And when Buddha Rakita himself observed, the forest is all the trees are not more than 70 years. Before we come, trees completely harvested, finished. We are the people, preserve them, so you can observe it. Trees are not 100 years, 200 years old. That's due to the monks coming and drilling, then only the forest going to preserve. But they say monks are cockroaches. Monks are encroaching. And they wanted to have 4 acres in the village and chase the monks out. Mind your own business, don't come to the forest. So that's a ditti. They're having a hard and fast view. Forest is for the sake of forest, nothing. So I was thinking, last time I participated for the Paramattaka Sutta, and I made 13 points, and I just shared with Venerable Buddha Rakshita, just to trap him, just to extract him, just to, just to get the maximum out of it, how it works with the climatic changes. So he criticized all the 13 points, what I made. And he said, no, Buddha is not talking about the ditthi and tanna, he is talking about mana, conceit. Now today he is very talkative and talking on the third dimension, that is mana, conceit. Maybe due to his conceit, I don't mind. So now we have 3, tanna, mana, ditthi. Have you heard about? They are the one they call more the mental proliferation. They are the one people entertain. They are mad. The ditti people keep on talking on the ditti. They don't care if it is mana or tanna. The tanna people keep on entertaining the sensuous pleasure. They don't care the ditti. They don't care the mana. The other people, that's the one mainly he presented today, mana. You are inferior. I am superior. But I am a forest monk. I am in the forest. I am not the village monk. Whatever may be, the part you tackle in the elephant, you say, this is I talk with my touch, direct touch. You can't change me. Trunk is such. It's like an arecana tree. Don't tell me. I know it. I touch it. And the people tackle the leg. They say it is like the vangidiya. Vangidi means pounding, this thing. And in the each and every kitchen, we used to have it. And we have one thing, that big lock, we are pounding. I don't know, mortar and something like that.
Pestle.
Huh?
Pestle.
Pestle. The mortar and pestle. Pestle. It is like, see, don't talk to nonsense. It is not flexible. It's like this thing. And the person who tackled the ear, he says, it's like a winnowing pan. You are using winnowing, it's very leathery. Don't talk about this thing. So they are very hard and fast. And they are talking with the direct touch because of the conceit. Now he is today overemphasizing conceit. He's conceited. I am not accusing personally. I am telling that for the sake of argument, for the sake of debate. So therefore, tanna mana ditthi, these are the, not only for the climatic, not only for the corona, everything. But people never change them. By talking, never change it. We can talk about the ditti with the ditti person, but he never see it. He feel like a irritation. He don't happy to understand, I am with ditti. When someone is with the mana, tanha, if I am going to say, you do everything out of your desire, sensuous pleasure. No, I am very balanced and I am... Blah, 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 blah. And if I am going to prove Buddha Rakita Hamrubhada, conceit, very difficult because he's Irish. Very conceited people. In both the way. Inferiority complex as well as the superiority complex. Never in the middle. And we in Sri Lanka, also with the Sinhalese Buddhist, and we are the maturity country, we are the protector of Buddhism, and I mean, biggest amount of suicidal rates in Sri Lanka, and all the Nazi thing, everything is available, still we are conceited. So, when you are taking an issue like tackling an elephant, how can you reduce into either ditti, either tanna, either conceit? They cannot be separated out. They are working in an integrated form. Because they can't see the elephant, but the king can see. So, therefore, king can see what the kind of... They are very vehemently proving that I am talking with my direct touch. I have no idea of conceiting you because I am with Dhritarashtra. But the king can laugh. But in this sutta, never related to that. Only Bhikkhu Bodhi is relating it to the commentary. Commentators are relating to that. But the sutta is talking about pure philosophy. And the blind elephant story is purely aesthetic. Very tangible, very folk story. They are really not related. So now I am going to relate that with the climatic changes. It's also another far away distance issue. How can we relate these three issues? Elephant example, Tannamanaditti explanation, and climatic changes or forest conservation. So that if the dialogue or discussion is going a long way, it will be very, very beneficial for me. But that's what I am basically thinking about for the conference. What should I present as a forest monk? We are living in the forest. We are not ditti. We say monks must live. But they say, no, monks must not. You mind your own business. You go to the village and do. They don't know forest monks. For example, the forest department. But the government, for the first time, designed a constitution now, the rights of the forest monks. Also maybe due to I went and shouted in front of the president. I told our indigenous people and Chena cultivation people and forest monks, no provisions to live in the forest. And the forest people are so in trouble because the constitution never changed. They are very hard and fast with the ditti. And the desire, the politicians sometimes felled 1,000 acres only for timber. Sometimes for systematic agriculture. But the conceit... politicians, forest monks, village monks, everyone is having. So how can we address to the issue like forest conservation or climatic changes and mindfulness as a tool? So I cordially invite you to, if you have any kind of an explanation or viewpoint that I consider as a personal gift for me. Understand or should I talk too much, still much?
Okay, maybe I'll just move on to the next verse again of this, because so that we can have a better oversight of the of this particular sutta. So the next verse is
one minute. I will just give the Sinhalese translation of the early three suttas.
Right,
stanzas. Then we are preparing the mind for the first sutta in the Paramattaka Sutta. Paramanti dittisu sabba parisabbathano paribbathano yadduttarin kurute jantu loke hinati anye tato sabba maha tasma vivadani aviti vanto. In this world, some with the wrong view, they say this is the best, mine is the best, rest is inferior. My teacher is the best. My meditation is the best. So that's what they say. Therefore, invariably, they say others are inferior. That's what they take the flag. Therefore, they can't exceed their view. They are entrapped. That's the first stanza. Second one, yadanti pasati anisansang yadatani, yadattani passati anisansan ditte sute silavate muteva tadeva so tatta samuggahaya nahinato passati sabbamanya. Second, 801 sutta, the gatha stanza number 801. Whenever someone is entrapped with the view, he can get attracted to the view, what he is seeing, visuals, or the sounds, or smelling, tasting, touching, or every time he take it with the self-conceited way. Whatever see, he promote his self. Whatever he hear, he promote his self. All the other three, he take in order to, therefore his director disposition get hard fast, never get relaxed. Therefore, he thinks, my teacher, my method, I am the best. All the others are touched with the inferior one. So therefore, they never open their views to the others. They never become open to the others. This is number two. Number three. Tangvapi gantham kusalang vadanti yang nishito pasati hinamanya. Tasmai dithang sutang mutangva silabhatambiku na nisseya. Nisseya. Silabhatambiku na nisseya. Someone if entrapped with that kind of a view, tell him my teacher is the best. Other teachers are there, but they are not superior like mine. That is what they think. Therefore, he look at the sensuous pleasure or sensuous impingements, feelings, perceptions, volitional activities and mind. Skandaji dakim nipuniyo oge e darshane, the enlightened people, liberated people understand person look at the world with the view, get entrapped and they are inmates in a prison. They can't get out. Therefore, liberated people never make use what he see, hear, smell, tasting and touching because he knows all these sensual impingements are misleading you if you are behind the wrong view. So therefore, they are not believing much about what you see, what you hear. What you see, that you are. Not that you can see what is available. So therefore, liberated people never take what the touch of the leg, touch of the ear, touch of the trunk and the tusker, they don't believe much. But they are believing touching with the wrong view. So ultimately they get hard and fast view. So therefore, even if you see, don't take it seriously. Even if you hear. So this is the third. Now you are going to go to the fourth.
So this fourth verse. Nor should one construct any view in the world by means of knowledge or good behavior and observances. One should not take oneself as equal or think of oneself as inferior or superior. Having abandoned what is taken up, not clinging, one does not take a dependency even on knowledge. Not taking sides amongst those who are divided, one does not fall back on any view at all. So that's the next two. So as Venerable Dhammajiva was trying to make fun of me saying somehow Irish people have a superior view maybe over the Sri Lankans, or I was pointing out the faults in his 13 points that he was making. Actually, as a culture, the Irish culture has an inferior point of view, as an inferior perspective. Say English or Americans will tend to have a superior point of view. You know, they're coming from an imperial background, and my own observation of Sri Lankans is that they have more of a slight inferior point of view compared to, say, Indians, who tend to view themselves as a little bit more superior. So Sri Lankans will tend to view that India is looking down on little brother Sri Lanka, and that they're kind of a small country, and that's kind of an island mentality. And I would see the same in Ireland. Ireland is a small country. It's not much bigger than Sri Lanka. It's only 5 million people. And so we kind of tend to not be boastful or push around or be big. We tend to be small. So one should not construct any view in the world by means of knowledge. So this is really important. I mean, both for Irish and for Sri Lankan people, getting a very good education is critical. So here it's rather radical that the Buddha would suggest that by means of knowledge that we shouldn't construct a view of the world. Knowledge is undoubtedly very important, and it should inform our view of the world. But we need to synthesize that knowledge into a knowledge that is in reality with the world. Dhammajiva was mentioning, I was very struck by that the forest officials would come into our monastery and complain that we were destroying the forest, when it was very clear to me from just looking very carefully at all the trees that the trees were the same age as the monastery. In other words, that the trees had grown up around the monastery. It wasn't that the monks had come in and knocked down the trees to make space in the forest. And I was really surprised, like, why are these forestry people who should be experts in trees so misidentifying? So, you know, it was just based on assumptions. They when you come into our forest, if you don't look carefully, you won't see that it's such a young forest, and it's not actually that it's not a primitive wilderness here. And so knowledge is useful. But it doesn't hold up the whole table of wisdom. So we always talk about Sutamaya Panya, Chittamaya Panya, and Bhavamaya Panya. So in other words, that we take in suttas. Our sutta is listening as well as like learning from teachers, and then we need to rationalize and think very carefully. So this is a different kind of knowledge to just book knowledge or knowing, where it's actually where you think about things very carefully. And then you have Bhavamaya Panya, which is where you have cultivated knowledge. You have cultivated knowledge, which is direct knowledge, direct experience, practical knowledge, and so forth. So by means of knowledge or good behavior or observances, one should not construct a view in the world. One should not take oneself as equal. These days, we can put a lot of emphasis on justice as being equality, but people are not equal. And as I mentioned before, you know, if you look at any twins, two identical twins, it can be quite astonishing at how different they are, that they are individuals. You know, they will not like being referred to as by the same name, or they may have different interests in music or food or weather, climate, temperature. You know, they have likes and dislikes, color, fashion. You know, it's very, very interesting that even in genetically identical people, that they have such different personalities or characters, even though they are very similar in many ways too. So no one is equal. No one is the same. And no one is inferior and no one is superior. So this is a very radical position to take. Normally, we believe if we get a good education, we're superior to somebody else. If we're rich, we're superior to somebody else. If we're young and fit and athletic and healthy, we're superior to somebody else who's inferior, who's sickly, who's weak, who's ignorant, who's poor. That's inferior. But here, radically, the Buddha is saying that we're not equal, we're not inferior, and we're not superior. So what are we then? We're in fact unique. So this is what the arahants would say when they became enlightened. They were unique. This is unique. They had overcome this this mana. They had overcome this conceited view. So having abandoned what is taken up, not clinging, one does not create a dependency even on knowledge. Even on knowledge. So not taking sides amongst those who are divided, one does not fall back on any view at all. So the Buddha is asking us to not fall back on views. We should be informed by views. We should be informed by knowledge. We should be informed by the different perspectives, not taking sides amongst those who are divided. The different perspectives that different people have, we should be informed by them. But we don't quickly get into any camp. And we try to develop a wise attitude towards all of these things. And this requires a tremendous stability of mind. It's so easy to go into extremes, into black and white thinking. You know, it's so easy to take a stand on some matter. It's so easy to be righteous about things. And it's so easy to be passionate about something, not equanimous, not, you know, equipoise. So to develop this equipoise of mind, to develop equanimity of mind, to just look on is a tremendous high quality of the mind. So again, here he's referring to how the arahant is viewing the world.
Mahasaya system. I translated that document, and you can read Saido's Paving the Path. He says at the beginning, for example, as meditators, when you are looking the rising and falling or in-breath and out-breath, you have to specifically see rising is not falling, falling is not rising. In-breath is not out-breath, out-breath is not in-breath. That is called intrinsic characteristic, individual characteristic and personal characteristic. So that is science. So you are asked to see in-breath, after out-breath, again in-breath, again out-breath, again in-breath, and see changes from in-breath to in-breath, in-breath to out-breath. So you get sucked into, you get penetrated into this thing that is, whenever the mind is mindful and face-to-face with the object, that is what you should do. That is the beginner's mind. So when it is happening, quicker than what you think, in-breath become out-breath. The similar characteristics going to happen. Because both of them may happen due to the movement of the air. So when that happens, in-breath and out-breath is more both vayopottapadatu, just air action. When that happens, people can't comprehend because they see in-breath is not out-breath, out-breath is not in-breath. That is what we are teaching. But ultimately, in front of your very eyes, you can see in-breath and out-breath become subtle, medium, and both of them are same. So then you get nauseatic feeling. You get, nausea or allergic reaction like. Yeah. How can I see? Because in-breath and out-breath is equal. And the rising and falling equal. And then both of them have similar characteristics. Earlier, specific characteristics. This changes the evolution. That is what our mind can't comprehend. That's why people are happy with samatha and not happy with vipassana. Earlier, separate. That is called individual characteristics. So that is called nama-rupa paricheda jnana. And then pachya parikha jnana, sammasana jnana. The third aspect is still you are not in the real vipassana. You see everything is equal. It's called natural characteristics. It's called sabhava lakshana. And then you see sabhava, bhava, gati, nature, expansion, contraction, cohesion and liquidity, hard and light. But there are no person, no in and out. So see intrinsic characteristic, individual characteristics and change slowly in front of your eyes. Go into system. There is a part and partial of the whole system. That is the difficult part. And that, Mr. Jnanarama says, Mahasi Sado so clearly indicated it. Of course, I will make a specific statement. More than Mahasi Sado, who Pandita Sado made the specific statement and he published a book, very thin book, known as The Clearing, the Paving the Path. So I was there for 8 to 9 months. Daily he chased me out, telling me what I am talking is not clear. I am seriously meditating. So one day a Vietnamese monk came. He is not a real meditator, but good communicator. He says, Bante, he is senior to me. You are taking a real honest effort, but daily get blackguarded, but you don't care. But Sayadaw, don't throw you out. Please read this book. That indicates how the intrinsic characteristic, individual characteristic change into the natural characteristics. It's a part and parcel of the whole system. And then you are nothing. In a sand bed, one grain of sand is nothing. At the beginning, that grain is so different from the next grain in the same bed. So this is how, within a short period, is changing. But present day, Mahasi system completely forgot on this stage. They are always asking to see individual characteristics, specific characteristics, that is scientific. When a system is coming, it is religious. You are also a human being, no difference with the female, no difference with the higher people, low people, you are human. So we are not happy to be just a citizen John. We wanted to be one-upmanship. So when that happens, evolution starts. Otherwise, you are bogged down either in ditthi, view, or conceit, or in desire. So if you are going to see now, he is different. But when everyone is there, he is another human being. Shido take a herd of cattle. You can see it's a calf, it's a heifer, It's a bull, it's a milking cow, but everything is a cow. Herd. So likewise, you must understand this perspective. Left brain is talking always with the specific individual interesting characteristic. Right brain is system approach. So Richard Davidson is the first person. In 1984, he published an article. He says, all the world due to this bloody education is left brain people. Very sharp. But they are hitting each other, not loving the nature, and they are one-upmanship. But he found in Tibet, two people, their right brain is active. For the first time in the functional MRI scan, Dalai Lama suggested first utter failure. Second one, he published an article. There are some people. And he was so amazed, but they are not worried about the individual incidents happening. This is the whole system as one unit, and there is a one sect of Buddhism known as Hua in Buddhism. Is take every part representing every other one. Which is, it's like a pebbles for example, cobweb, you'll say, water droplets are there. Each pebble, each droplet reflecting all the other droplets, this thing, and it's connected with the cobweb. So we can't say we are individuals. We are individuals, but we are not individuals. So that approach is lost in the climate situation. That approach is lost in forest conservation. Because they are looking with the partial knowledge. They don't look at the everything. Everything-wise, I can't say they have not looked into that because they now see the relationship between the forest preservation and mindfulness. That's a bright idea. Earlier they think in the UN and the WHO and Monetary Fund and now they see the relationship between the mindfulness and the forest conservation and the climatic. So that is radical. So while representing the mindfulness, forest monks, what we should do to the world community.
Yeah, but you can't just reduce it down. And like I said, this is systemic thinking. You have to go beyond systemic thinking.
Not systemic. I am thinking as a scientific, scientific individual, and then individual changes the system. Again, system go to the individual system. So when it is happening, you concede have no place to take a stand. Systemic is 50%.
No, but what I mentioned to you is looking at the universal through the particular. So through the particular lives of us being forest dwellers and our interdependency and interrelationship with the surrounding communities. Like we cannot live here in the forest without the support of the surrounding villages or the surrounding people or the donors.
That is against the system. So system means everything is considered.
Don't talk me down. You want to be the boss. Wait.
You threw out all the four. All the four stanzas. You fail to see the system approach.
No, I the system approach is like it's very interesting that the Buddha doesn't go for it.
No, he's going on all the four. I will show you.
He's pointing down. He's pointing to the more universal aspects of mana.
Today we took time. So tomorrow also, day after also, we took time. I'll show you. You added the conceit, that's a good part. But the system approach is what he is talking in all the four.
So he's pointing out how there is the universal in the individual and how we're all unique, how everybody can be unique and yet we can be human. So it's in Mahayana, they call it about interbeing and inter-are. And how we can, it's not so easy to systematize on the one hand the unique qualities and on the other hand the universal qualities. So you go back to the breath, each breath is unique in every moment, in every single time frame. It is a unique breath. It's uniquely rising or present or passing away, or it is broken down or it is dissolved. It's in a flux. It is unique. But it has universal. So this is paradox. The paradox of reality. It's a paradox. And wisdom is the royal honey for the wisdom is the paradoxical nature of life. And the conflict that we run into in systematic thinking is that we fall into categories. We categorize something as somebody as like this and like that, and therefore, is in the system. when in fact there's also this paradox that they're individual. And an individual isn't like this and like that. They are unique and wonderful and special. So it is this tension and this paradoxical thinking between the interbeing, the inter-are, the universal, and the unique, wonderful, and momentary, only here now in this very present time, individual. So that is the ultimate problem, in a way, that we are faced with. You know, this is the existential problem. And when we fall into the camp of everything as a system, then we fail to see the individual. And when we're lost in the individual, we fail to see the community. We fail to see the world. And as forest monks, we have that dynamic of being hermits, being alone in the forest, but yet being completely dependent on society around us and having good relations. And as I mentioned to you before, like in different Buddhist sects, like in the Mahayana tradition, they became too independent. They were growing their own food and keeping away from everybody, and they have no relationship with society, so therefore they lost the support of society. Or in Christianity, I saw this particularly in Ireland, in all of our monasteries, they collapsed because they were so independent. They were like kingdoms. They were so independent, and eventually the kings would just come in and kill all the monks and take over the land and take over all the wealth and the prosperity because they were independent. So it's in the long run, this interbeing, inter-are. And as a practitioner, I find that, okay, I can do my work on the cushion, but it's also very useful for me at times to, you know, go into the city and bump into other people and have my views challenged. And then I, you know, it's like rubbing off the corners, like the stone in the river. It gets rounded by the movement in the river. You know, you're not just, like too many people can be like they want their little safe space. And nobody bother them and nobody disturb them. And they don't grow up as a result. They become like the little plant in the greenhouse, that they're not able to stand alone or stand by themselves or stand up to any condition, you know, and they become conditional. Whereas, again, in Buddhism, the Buddha is always pointing back to, you know, how conditional the world is, and the mature, the wise person.
Yeah, time is also up, but we are advancing, so we'll take it to the next week also. I cordially invite you to come and participate, and with that, your chart also come into being now. The Bhikkhu Bodhi is presenting these two systems. It is coming closer to this one, but it's not related to the forest or not related to the climate, but given how the human mind is working. So thank you very much for the participation. Now we take time for the Pindapatha.